Hello, listeners. This is AKP. I'm jumping in here before the episode actually starts to explain some things that are going to be a bit different. This is going to be a bit of an odd episode in some ways. We're going to start with John and I reviewing the LA match. We recorded that last week when John was still available, but then halfway through the episode, it's actually going to jump to a conversation recorded earlier this week between myself and Roland Pratt, who will help me be previewing the Houston match and just generally discussing where the team is at the first bye week. I'm not going to take up any more time here, though. It's a great episode. It's a bit of a long episode, but have fun. Here we go. Here's the actual episode.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Glorious Rugby Podcast. I'm your co-host, John Fitzpatrick. And joining me is my fellow co-host, Alistair Kirschpool, AKP. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I would be doing better if we'd had a home win by now, but a tie is still at least some points.
Yes, consolation prize, at least some points. But can you believe it? Old Glory has two wins, two losses, two draws, no wins at home yet. Both of the draws have been a 22-22 score. AKP, what is going on this year?
I don't know. We've managed to go 2-2-2 with two 22-22 draws, which is a lot of twos. If only we were in second place with that, though, it would be.
Right, exactly. But we're not, which is so wild. So much to talk about. But AKP, I want to shout out something first. Speaking of numbers, I believe this is episode number 60 for us.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, we're doing pretty well.
60 episodes. We're like senior citizens of the...
Nearing retirement age.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, but we're only a year and a bit in. We've got a ways to go before we can retire things.
We do. We have a ways to go. We have a ways to go in the Major League Rugby season 2024. We'll get into this in a little bit, but we're probably at a good point for Old Glory DC in the season to take a rest, a breather, assess where we've come from, where we're going, what still needs to happen. Good timing, bad timing for Old Glory DC. Talk to me about the importance of this bye week happening right now.
I think bye weeks are one of those weird ones. In some ways, it's great. The team gets to have a rest, work on some things, but also it can be really disruptive to momentum. Sometimes teams come out of a bye week and you know, look a little weird the next week. I think this is perfect timing, though, because we've seen a lot in the first few weeks. There was a fair amount of change up in the lineups in the first sort of 3 or 4 weeks, and then it's really settled down since then. But so I think we know the lineup we're going with, but there are still some problems. And we'll get into this later. You know, it's sort of, there's a lot of key things that we do well as a team, and there's a lot of important things that the team has clearly practiced and seems very like a well-oiled machine. You know, the set pieces look great and that sort of thing. But then it feels like the game plan overall has somewhat suffered. I'm not quite sure what this team is trying to be right now. And I think that's the perfect sort of thing to fix in a bye week. You know, take some time off, not have to be focusing on the next opponent and say, What are we trying to do? How should we be focusing our efforts? What's the goal of this team in terms of how they want to look on the field? And I think, you know, they've really got the opportunity to do that. And it's, you know, six games in, that's not quite half the season. It's like, what, 40% of the season or something like that is gone. You've seen enough that you know what to work on, but you still have enough ahead of you that there's things, time to fix things and you know, every Old Glory has everything in front of them. They could still end up at the top of the conference, be hosting playoff games. You know, the you went over the standings just now. It's not that no one's that far apart. And, you know, New England has had the opportunity to have some easier games in the opening weeks, and they've got some tough games coming up. And so, you know, there's really everything to play for still. And I think this bye week should give them the opportunity to really take aim at that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it's also, if you think about it, if you look what's ahead after this bye week, they've got two testy Western Conference opponents coming up, right? And that starts in week 8 when Old Glory DC hosts the Houston Sabrecats, who's, you know, as of this airing, are still the only remaining unbeaten team. They are going to host the New England Free Jacks in week 7. So a very interesting match to watch there. And then following that, week 9, Old Glory DC will be on the road going up to Utah. Tough place to play. Utah, all of a sudden, guys are getting healthy. That Michael Manson kid, that dude is a baller. Speedy dude. And then week 10, guess what? Week 10. And remember, these last few weeks, we've been playing without our captain, Jameson Fanana-Schultz, who's been on suspension. He returns week 10 when Old Glory DC, I believe it's a home match, or it could be on the road, but they play the Miami Sharks, which, you know, again, Eastern Conference opponent. It's got to be a win. Certainly looking forward to having Jamma back with the way what he brings to the squad, right? So good time to reset, figure out the strengths, focus on that. Guys are coming back, right? Meaningful minutes now for Chicken, who is looking pretty good out there. Okay, we knew about Nico and his unavailability, but now the public knows, so that's good. That's settled there. Colin Gross has been playing really well. Tweaks and things to figure out. Knock on wood, relatively healthy. But if you look across it, right in the mix through it all. Right in the mix. 2-2-2, not the record we want, but Old Glory DC, right in the mix, not too far behind, 1-2. I mean, yeah, you'd love to win all the games, but that's not going to happen. But in the mix, looking competitive, we can quibble on other things. We'll get to more of that in a moment. AKP, let's talk a little bit about this RFC LA match. You talked a little bit about how we feel like the roster's starting to come together. We know what that match, day 23, is going to look like. So give me your thoughts. When you saw the lineup for week 6 against RFC LA, what were your immediate thoughts?
It was pretty much as expected. I mean, I think the only deviation from the sort of standard that they've landed on is Cali Martinez starting instead of coming off the bench. I think that was because we've seen really strong open field play from Cali Martinez. And so it was Tyler Roland has the edge when, you know, it actually comes to scrumming on that tight head side, but Martinez has, you know, I think he's gained more meters, you know, per carry than any of the other front row forwards. And he's really, except Vaca probably, but you know, he's really been impactful, and he really has a tendency to, you know, keep going after the first player hits him and, you know, get that extra meter or two. And I think it does make a difference to the way the team plays.
Mm-hmm. You know, we start to see a little bit more Tevita Nkwali, which I think is important. It'll be interesting to see how that works in the second row there. I think Rob Harley, who was captain, I believe, against RFC LA, he's a fiery dude. He's been a great presence in the lineup. Ignacio Dotti's played well, but it seems like, you know, we may see more minutes exchanged, if you will, between Dotti and Nkwali. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the goal, is to have... You've got three players there who are all top quality players, and they each have their own strengths and in things that they accomplish. I think, you know, Nangali might be the best open field runner of them. I mean, it was a year or two ago that he was our top player in terms of meters gained, and you know, I think Harley really brings it, the breakdown. He hit a ton of breakdowns this time. He's really a defensive stalwart, And then, you know, Dottie really shines in the lineouts. And so I think, you know, there's bits and pieces there you can play and you can give them rest. And I think, you know, that's what a robust position looks like. That's, you know, when you have enough players that they can all get playing time, but they're, you don't have to play any one of them at any particular time, and you can mix and match as necessary.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think one thing that surprised me, and this may have affected how the last 20 minutes of the game went against RFC LA, but so Martin Vaca started. Facundo Gattas was scheduled to be, quote-unquote, the backup hooker, right, to come off the bench. He was a game day unavailable selection, and then Koikoi Nelligan was inserted into the lineup. I like Koikoi, plays with a ton of energy. You know you're going to get 100% effort out of him. I think just based on experience, level of competition, you know, Facundo's certainly a better player than Koikoi right now, and Koikoi,
yeah,
has had some struggles with the line-out tosses. And I think we saw that a couple times towards the end of the game. A couple of the line-out throws weren't quite on target. Did that affect the game a little bit? Perhaps. Maybe a little bit. But, you know, I just wonder, was it an injury thing? Was it a sickness? I don't know. But that's probably an area right there where it's Martin, who's hooker one, Facundo, hooker two, and then Koikoi spelling in minutes when he can. I mean, do you think differently on that one?
Yeah, no, I would agree in general. I think, I don't know what's up with Gattas. I mean, he was unavailable for a bunch of the beginning of the season with injury. And, you know, maybe it's one of those things where he came back and then he re-aggravated that injury and...
Yeah.
And, you know, it's out again, or, you know, it's something niggling or something like that. Or maybe, you know, maybe he's got a totally new injury. Who knows? It is unfortunate because I do think he is a really good player. And we have seen great things from him. Mm-hmm. He started against Anthem, wasn't it? And was great.
Scored two tries.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, can't
look, apparently every hooker in the league scores two tries against. And then former Old Glory DC hooker Nick Sushan scored two tries in his start for Utah against Anthem in week six. So, yeah.
Yeah, but he's a great option there, and I would love to see him get mm-hmm. more time, especially since, you know, Vaca really plays flat out the whole game, and he's really puts in a lot of effort. I mean, he chased down a kick at one point, gathered like he was a winger or something. It was craziness. But, you know, it's hard to keep that up for a whole game. And if you have Gattas on the bench, you're like, okay, well, we can switch him 20-30 minutes from the end of the game and it still not see a drop in the hooker position. Koikoi, he's younger. He's got more developing to do. I think he's stepped up well. Mm. He looks way better this year than he did last year, and he's on that path to improvement, but it's maybe a bit much to ask him to be taking on a huge ton of minutes every game. So
yeah, well, let's talk about the game a little bit. And one of the things that, you know, I was concerned about, I always say score early, score often. It's just, and you always talk about, you know, control the game, the pace, like, take charge. Old Glory DC in the first 10, 15 minutes found themselves down by 10 points. AKP, you were in the crowd. What was the mood in the crowd, and what did you see that first quarter of the match?
It was... I don't think the crowd was too concerned at that point. I mean, it definitely wasn't great. But we'd also had our opportunities there. I mean, you know, McVee got it stripped out, you know, on the goal line, which was disappointing. But, you know, we'd shown that we didn't look like we were just getting dominated or anything like that. We looked like we were in it, and we'd just gotten a little unlucky not to have scored and made it. So I don't think there was too much concern, but there was definitely like, okay, boys, we've got to get in this.
Yeah. And then, I mean, like you said, there's a calmness. And what I mean by that, not like that they don't care, but never a sense that Old Glory is out of the game, you know, particularly going back to the New England game when they were down by, you know, 12, 15 points. There's never a sense that they're just going to stop and give up. They just know, hey, this is, you know, it's a long game. We'll stick to our game plan. We can claw back. And certainly they did. Came right back into the game. But then AKP, we saw a lot of ill discipline from RFCLA. Card after card. Old Glory, extra man advantage there. Started to take the lead. Why couldn't we close it out, though? Why couldn't we, you know, put the, you know, just end them, so to speak? I don't mean to be so graphic, but like Mortal Kombat, you know, what's that phrase at the end? You know, like, why couldn't we just put the game away? Given the fact that we were up so, you know, a man, it's so many, you know, for so long.
It's a really good question. We just didn't capitalize on the opportunities that we had. We just didn't. And part of that, it seemed like the, you know, we really struggled to with the basics. We dropped a lot of balls and we, yeah, I don't know. And part of it is we really didn't open up things well for our wingers either. I mean, both of our wingers were under 100 meters gained for the match, which isn't great. And the wings were having to do a lot of work to get the meters that they were getting. I mean, Axel Muller only managed to gain 36 meters, but that's despite the fact that he beat three defenders, which is, that's a good number of defenders to beat. That means you're doing a lot of work to get past people and you still can only gain 36 meters. That means that you beat someone, but there was someone behind him. And the only way that happens on the wing is if they've managed to bring numbers over because the rest of the team hasn't done enough to open up the wings. And so I think that's part of it. And we saw that improve towards the end of the game. We saw Old Glory pick up the pace, you know, when they actually had to score because they weren't ahead. We saw them pick up the pace and really open up a bit more space sort of all along the line. And I think, I don't really know if that's a mindset thing, if this Old Glory team just got a little too comfortable just, you know, smashing away in the middle of the field and relying on their defense to not let LA through, which worked. I mean, you know, LA got those two quick tries in the beginning, first 15 minutes, and then they didn't score anything until, you know, the last 15 minutes. And that middle, I guess, 50 minutes of the match, we really didn't let them have a lot, you know, or accomplish a lot in the, mm-hmm. especially in the middle of the field. And, you know, that goes back to Old Glory being really good at some things. Our defense is really good. We tackle well. We hold the line well. We don't really provide a lot of opportunities for our opponents. But then, yeah, it kind of collapsed towards the end of the... Now, part of that, there was a missed call on the last try.
Let's
which, if you were in the stadium, you would have heard everyone screaming their heads off for an obstruction call.
So let's talk about that. And I don't necessarily... Old Glory didn't lose the game because that was not that was a non-call. Like, we're not saying that at all. Okay, Old Glory DC should have won. They didn't close out the game. But what I think we've noticed here, and we saw it in Week 7 where the TMO on certain plays where an MLR team has scored have gone back, looked back a couple phases, and determined that a try should not have counted. To me, there seems to be some inconsistency about how these, and this is just my opinion, inconsistency about how the TMO is interjecting in certain moments of the game. When I was watching the game, and I was watching it at home, after three Little League baseball games, I did have a beer or two, but I could see clearly. To me, all the players raised their hands in Old Glory, like, clear obstruction here, right? The RFC LA lock kind of ran forward. Boney couldn't get in there. It created a seam, created some separation to gain meters. Boom, next play, they scored, right? Or it was something like that.
Yeah.
To me, it seemed pretty clear and pretty obvious. There looked like there was an obstruction there. TMO didn't say anything. I don't know. Old Glory raised their hands. The ref had to see them raising some objection on the field. Did they not discuss it to the ref? Did the ref not go to the TMO? Did the TMO look at it and say, no big deal? Like, what happened there?
Yeah, it's difficult to know. And then someone did come out on the field, but it was about something totally different. It was about subs rules for subs for yellow cards and that stuff. It, yeah. So at first I thought they were reviewing it, and then, but they apparently just never even took a look. I watched the broadcast back and I didn't hear the TMO communicate anything. And it seems like it should be a routine thing. TMO should be back there. And the thing is one of those where even if they ultimately decided that it wasn't obstruction, I would disagree, but I would say fair enough. But the fact that they didn't even seem to go back and check, it was pretty clearly on the border. You know, it was pretty clearly something that you'd have to double check to make sure it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so it was a bit disappointing. But like you say, it's not the reason Old Glory lost,
yeah.
Or they didn't lose. That's the thing; they tied. It's not the reason Old Glory. We just
a tie. Yeah, exactly. It feels like a loss. Go ahead. Yeah.
And it feels like a loss because LA really deserved to lose. They were playing dirty the whole game. Mm. It was. I mean, they're lucky they didn't get more yellow cards. There's one of them reached through and batted the ball out of Danny's hands from a ruck.
Yeah.
Despite being on the ground. And that one was ruled a knock-on by Danny instead. And it's just like, come on, you can't do these things. But again, not the reason that Old Glory, you know, tied in the end. Because they were up a man. I mean, LA got 5 yellow cards. And one of them was upgraded to a red card because it was a double yellow. Like,
yeah.
They had 60 minutes of being, you know, 60 player minutes. So, like, yeah. You know, there was some overlap there. But, you know, like half a game of being up at least one man, sometimes up two men, and they scored 3 tries total.
And like,
come on.
Yeah,
that's, come on, Old Glory. Figure it out. Score the tries, for goodness sake. Like, how can you not open up space? And, like, why are your wingers not getting over 100 meters gained when you've got a man advantage? Create the overlaps. Everyone draw their man, just hammer in and like get the ball out wide once you've created some space. You know, play quickly so that they're having to recycle and you're making their guys, you know, all the only 13, 14 players on the field make extra tackles because they have to cover for the people who aren't there. Like, find the space. There's 14, 13 players on the field. It's, oh man, frustrating.
Well, it's super frustrating because I'd hate for us to be Old Glory DC fans, find us in a situation towards the end of the season where we're either like scrapping for second or third or first, and it's coming down to like a table point here or there, and we're going back and we're looking at games where did we miss a point? And is this a game where being up by, like you said, so many guys that bonus point try, right, for 4 tries scored should have been, we should have grabbed that. We should have had that early in the second half, and we didn't. You know, like, that's a table point right there that we should have gotten and we didn't. And that is very frustrating because I don't want to have an exercise in 8 or 9 weeks looking back saying, okay, where were the games where we missed out on table points? And circling this one as one of them. Because, honestly, the expectation with Old Glory should be we are scoring 4 tries every match. I don't care what defense we're lining up. We dropped 38 against New England. They have a 35-38. They have a great defense. Our offense, I truly believe this, I feel like we can get 4 tries scored every single game. That should be, in my mind, a minimum expectation from this squad. And dang it, we didn't get it.
Yeah. I mean, LA has been pretty good on defense.
Great point.
All year. Better than New England in many ways. I don't think New England's that good. But, and it was also, it's the sort of defense that I think was particularly bad for us. Like, they were strong up front. You know, New England's got a good defense, but they're not good at stopping the forwards. And that's where our strength was. So we managed to bully them and score a bunch of tries. But yeah, there's no reason. We've got the quality of players. I mean, Axel Muller, Damian Hoyland, like, tearing up that backfield. I mean, we've seen what John Rizzo can do if you get him some space, and we just can't seem to do anything to unleash these guys.
Yeah.
And it, you know, Tommaso Boni, great game again. You know, when you've got a quality center like that, how is it that the field just isn't opening up for them? And the thing is, I think it's beyond what I can answer at this point. You know, I don't see anything obvious that they're doing wrong where I'd be like, just change this and suddenly it'll work. I just you know, that's the coaches. It's a hard, and part of this is that, you know, this league is so competitive right now. Everyone is so close. All these games are, you know, we've had, even when teams have won by a fair number of points, they were almost always down at halftime or something. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't had very many just clear blowouts where it's like one team was in dominant the whole game and yep. and came away with it. It's every game is tight and competitive. And, you know, thank goodness Old Glory plays the way they play with a strong defense. Like, we keep ourselves in every game, but that only matters if we can, if we have some way to win it in the end. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great that we can keep every game close and we can keep everything, you know, have an opportunity at the end of every game to win it. But, you know, at the end of the day, that means we need to find a way to surefire score that last try that wins it, or make the drop goal that wins it, or hold on to the ball until they commit a penalty and we can Jason can put it through the sticks and we can win it, you know. And I think that's what we're missing right now.
Two thoughts quickly. One, I'm glad you brought up drop goal. Even at the end of the game, it seemed like there was an opportunity for your boy. I know you're a super big Grady fan. He's probably our best kicker distance wise. It seemed like there was an opportunity towards the end of the game. We were driving down the field. The score is tied. There's a drop goal situation. Was the wind kind of in Grady's, blowing in his face a little bit? I mean, I think a lot of people were opposite. Like, hey, drop goal time. Let's at least give it a go.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, that's the drop goals are risky. It's one of those where 100%. They don't always work out. And you have to have, you know, if a player's not feeling it, if a player's not confident they can get it, then I'd rather they, you know, I'll trust them on that.
Sure.
You know, you as a player know whether you have a chance at that or not. And if you're not feeling it, it's probably not going to work out. But it is one of those that strategically you just wish they'd found something.
Well, okay. So, yeah, maybe to me it seemed like the field looked dry enough. Maybe it was a little too squishy, or maybe the footing wasn't quite good, and the riskiness of trying to drop goal, maybe you don't strike it the way you want it. Totally get that. Going back to your other point, and maybe this is a good time to kind of take stock of where Old Glory DC is after playing six games, first bye. You talked about a couple of trends here, but what are some of your other kind of observations, takeaway for this MLR season? You mentioned margins being a little bit tight. Old Glory DC, even at half, never being out of a game, not being up by a ton. But what are some other, what else have you observed through 6 weeks of Old Glory so far?
I think it's important to note that there are some things we do really well and way better than in past seasons. The tackling is just so much better, so much more consistent. And, you know, things like the scrum, you know, I haven't had this much confidence in our scrum being good since that, I think it was 2021, where we brought in a bunch of guys who end up going to Europe because they were good enough for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the line out, solid. I feel, you know, those set pieces, I feel just so confident. Every time they happen, I'm like, okay, this is an opportunity for us to take advantage. You know, and so it feels like we've got all these component pieces that work well, and then we just don't put them together in a way. We haven't figured out what the winning formula is with those ingredients yet. And we've had it at moments. It feels like a little elusive. There's, you know, we had it against New England, and we had it, you know, I think we had it against Chicago. We just couldn't put it together. And I don't really know how you find that, or what that, you know, it feels like there doesn't need to be that much tweaking before this team can be dominant and really, you know, take control. But we've also seen that this team can't really sustain its top level for a whole game. We've seen some games where there's a slow start that they have to pull back from, and then we've also seen, you know, endings where they really let teams back in the last 10 minutes or so. I mean, you look at when we lost to Nola Gold I mean, the problem there was that we didn't score any tries, but it was also they didn't score anything at all until the last, like, 15 minutes. You know, you look at this week, we had a pretty clear lead, two-score lead, and then the last 15 minutes we gave it up. You know, look at San Diego, close competitive match. You know, we led at halftime, and then the last 15 minutes of that match, we just really collapsed. And that, I don't know if that's a fitness thing or if it's just we changed the way we play or something like that, or the other teams bring a new level and we can't handle it. But there's, I think there's something there that we need to figure out.
I'll throw this out there. I mean, again, we saw that Jama got the red card in the Chicago match, and we saw how that match turned out, right? Ended up being a draw. Lost to San Diego at home, you know? A draw here against RFC LA. I mean, maybe Jama's a bigger presence on the field than... And we know he already has a massive presence on the field. Certainly with this play, and you know the other teams are probably changing tactics a little bit, but you know Jama brings that big bruising running style, gains so many meters, softens up the defense, creates opportunities and holes and gaps for the back line. I gotta think some of the maybe struggles we're having on not getting results that we want is because he's not out there on the field knowing we can count on him for 80 solid minutes. I don't know what else to put it on, because I look at it, these, I watch the games, and the players don't look like they're giving up. They're playing hard. Yeah. I mean, they're testy out there. You know, they're jawing all the way through. There's no way, you know, so I don't know what else to pin it on, other than maybe it just takes a little bit more time to gel. The field's great. The home, you know, the Maryland Soccerplex has been a fantastic venue, all grass. So maybe I'm just like grasping for straws here, but to me the thing that sticks out is the absence of Jama on the field.
Yeah, and maybe that's it. But I mean, I do think that it's something tactical as well. That mm-hmm. you know, we've got the quality of players. We just need to find, you know, maybe it's, you know, something I was looking at is we've put Willie T in, and I think he's great in so many ways, and specifically he can distribute the ball from the 13 position really well, but he often doesn't have that many options outside of him. So maybe we just need to use him in a way where mm-hmm. he's got more options for people to distribute to, or maybe we just need to tell him, hey, stop trying to get the ball to someone, straighten up, offload it to someone, but don't be going for those long passes as much. Yep. And just carry the ball more. You know, I don't, and that's where I'm not, you know, I'm not a good enough coach or something like that, to analyst or whatever, to really be able to dive down. Yep. And in some ways I don't know that there's only one way to do it or something like that. Yep. But there, I feel like there's got to be a way to put this together more efficiently and to make our attack a little bit more efficient. And I guess that probably hasn't been the focus of the team. We knew they were going to be a defense-focused team, but it feels like there's something they could do there. Mm-hmm. And then for not fading, I mean, yeah, like you say, it doesn't seem like the players are dropping off, but somehow things get unsettled and they don't seem coherent in at times, and I don't know how you fix that either. You know, maybe that's a leadership thing. Maybe you bring Jama back and he just leads by example and gets you out of that. But that's also a problem we've been having all year, and it's not just since we lost Jama.
Going to Willie T for a second, we did see moments in the last game or two where he was kind of the first receiver on some of those plays, and they looked a little design, which is great, right? Because defense has to count for either. You know, they kind of like split the back line, you know, Robertson on one side, Willie T on the other, and Willie T's been first receiver. But do you switch it up? Do you throw Willie T at 12 and you throw Boney at 13 just to kind of mix things up a little bit, you know, to play off of Willie T's ball handling skills, which may be a little bit better than Boney? Boney being just a pure get the ball run, bash through someone. We saw a couple of those runs in LA where he was like dragging guys I don't know, though. And, you know, all great questions to ask. And I think Ben Sima's the attack coach for Old Glory DC. And I'm sure he and Simon Cross are cooking stuff up in the lab, so to speak, as they say. But, again, I'm going to keep saying this. This is a squad that I feel like the minimum expectation every single game should be 4 tries scored. I'm sorry that we should be getting at least 1 table point every game scoring 4 tries with the personnel we have out there on the field. If we got to get Hoyland the ball, if we got to get Axel Muller again the ball more often, if we got to force it to him, something like 4 tries scored should be the expectation every single game. I'm going to keep beating that drum until I bust a hole in the drum. But anyway. Yeah, AKP, it does. It's a tie, but it feels like a loss, even though we did get 2 table points out of it. Ugh, ties, they bother me, but yet I love the fact that games can end in a draw because both sides walk out there unsatisfied.
Well said. But unfortunately, that's enough of Fitzy for now. Instead, joining me for the second half of this episode is Roland Rolly Pratt, formerly of the Road to Glory podcast. And now, what are you up to, Rolly?
Well, I'm still doing a little bit of work for MLR. I've got some sideline reporting coming up. I'll be doing the game for Old Glory on May 4th, and I'll be heading down to Carolina to do a game there in May also. So still got my foot in the door there, and still working away with coaching Beltway Sevens and the Maryland Exiles junior team in the summer. So I'm fully involved with rugby still.
Yeah, got a lot on your plate. I mean, obviously you're a pretty familiar voice for probably most of our listeners. You've been in and around Old Glory, you know, really since the beginning, right?
Yes.
I mean, you were a commentator for the
inaugural season. Yeah.
The exhibition season in 2019. Mm-hmm. And
yep, been there ever since, and it's been a pleasure to work with the team, and it's been a pleasure to have, you know, just made so many friends and, you know, acquaintances, and, you know yourself, the rugby community is a very close-knit community, and there's a lot of good people, so I really love the environment, and, you know, long may it continue.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you on the podcast because, you know, I was a regular listener of Road to Glory podcast. You know, I don't know, it feels a bit like having a celebrity on the pod here.
Oh, stop, please. No, it was a shame to see the end of the Road to Glory. I thought we had something good going there, especially myself and Bree, you know, in the early days. But, you know, life goes on, and, you know, there's only so many things that the team can get into, you know, at one time or another. You know, never close the door on it. Maybe it'll come back someday. But right now, you're in the wheelhouse here, and you know, you have the podcast going on, so I am completely at your whim.
Yeah, obviously early in the, you know, the MLR is still pretty young, everything's still being figured out, and as a great transition, this team is still pretty new, pretty, you know, new coach this year, a lot of new faces. How are we feeling about how this season has gone so far?
It's been a very, I'll say this, it's been a very interesting season, that's for sure. There's been a lot of moving parts. This was a big off season for the team. We brought in a whole bunch of new, fresh faces, and practically all of them have played really well. I'm really happy with the state of the players that they brought in. I'm really happy with a lot of the players that stayed and that are still there. So clearly someone in the managerial standpoint has been doing a good job. I have a lot of time for Simon Cross, the head coach. Obviously, he's new as well, and he's starting to put his fingerprints on the team. I love the idea of building from defense up, like that's your first, and I don't think we've ever had that here. Now, MLR is very much an attacking first league. So the fact that we're you know, going back to their defensive roots might be a little bit odd for some folks, but I do believe that having a foundation of excellent defense is what begins every good team. And I think we're at that stage where I don't think we're a good team yet, but I think we're getting there. I think that we're currently, it's fair where we are in the standings, but we're right in the middle of things, if you will. You know, we're sort of in mid-pack, but a win here or there would boost us up. But a loss would bring us back down again, you know, so very much mid-table. But I think, though, generally we'll be happy enough with the early going. We've had a few injuries, and the loss of Jamison, the suspension there is huge.
Yeah.
Again, I just sometimes I scratch my head with World Rugby these days. That suspension is just borderline ridiculous and makes me challenge everything I know about rugby. But anyway, we've definitely spoken about that before.
Yeah.
So
burned a lot of airwaves talking
about
that.
Yeah, exactly. So I won't burn up anymore, but I just let it be known that, you know, probably one of those draws could have been turned into a win at least, you know. I do think that we nipped a game from New England. We should have lost that game. And that was an amazing comeback, and it's lovely to see the team do something like that against an excellent side, league champions. But I thought that we gave away points then in the two draw-in games, where we need to start winning our home games. And I think that we have a lovely stadium now. I think that there's a lot of advantages to being there. And I think that the team just needs to put down, you know, a really strong home performance for the fans. I think that's the one thing that we're kind of crying out for right now, that we can celebrate a win at home. While the games, especially I remember the Chicago game was a very fun game to watch, it ended up sort of like as a damp squib, if you will, like when everybody's just left kind of like looking at one another going, well, I suppose, you know, a couple of points is fine, but we really want those W's. And I think Simon would agree with me on that. But it's lovely knowing that he's here for a couple of years, so that you always can tell the teams that have a new coach early. It takes them a little while to get into the swing of things, to understand the new systems and exactly what the coach is looking for. And he's been clearly working with pairings as well, you know, trying to see what I think everybody practically in the squad has played now at some point in time, which is a far cry from what we've seen in previous seasons where guys would just rot on the bench. And it's lovely to see guys like Brady Daniel and John Rizzo and, you know, get in and play quality minutes and, you know, see players like Danny Tusitala having to take a step back because, you know, there's strength and depth at the nine position, which is almost unheard of, you know. So I'm a lot, I think our squad is better this year. I think that, you know, the team, that will be put out, the 23 on a Saturday, is definitely would beat any team that we've put out previously in any other given year. But the league has gotten stronger also. Every yeah. other team improves every single season. So you cannot just rest on your laurels and say, oh, that's a great team. We have the potential to be good, but we're not quite there yet. And my biggest concern is our general attacking play. I've become quite happy with the defense, even though, you know, other teams can score 20 plus points. We've kind of stopped the driving ball. We're good in the set piece. We make dominant tackles. I love all of that stuff. My issue right now is that we seem to be a little bit lost in the midfield area on attack. Not quite sure. I don't want to say that our centers aren't doing what's being asked of them, but it's sometimes difficult to see what pattern of play they're trying to achieve. And I think that's probably going to come, you know, as the coaching staff start paying more attention to this. You know, I think Kurt Baker's got a lot on his plate as the attacking coach. I think he has really got to sit down and figure out a proper template of what we want to do in second, third through 10th phase, I think we start getting lost a little bit as the phases go on, and we end up just kind of going through the motions without really setting anything up per se. But that might be a little bit of, that's clearly something that the coaching staff will want to improve upon as the season goes on.
Yeah, but for sure.
you know, I think though, on the blush of things, we're played six games right now. We're across the board, you know, even with the two draws, and it's probably fair. I think we're right where we're supposed to be. We're in around about third and fourth right now. I do foresee us. I think we're a better team than Chicago. I think we'll end up being a better team than New Orleans. And I think we'll come in our area probably third, you know, second or third at the end of the season. But I think that we can make a push for playoffs. And just like last year, once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen, right? So it would be lovely to get another playoff journey happening here and, you know, maybe make some noise. But it's really and truly now it's all up to the players a little bit, I'd say, Alistair, because, you know, the management team have put together a good group there. It seems to be harmonious. I don't see sort of any major infighting or anything like that. They're all together. But it's time to start turning a few of those draws into victories here and hopefully gain a few points in the standings.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with all of that. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, just looking at the difference between last season and this season in terms of the quality of the teams. And, you know, I think New England they probably improved the least in the offseason, and they went from being, you know, pretty dominant last season to suddenly they're not. Like, I mean, they're still winning games, they're still, you know, ahead of the Eastern Conference for a reason, but they're not crushing it. They lost to us.
They're beatable.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like the sort of natural, you know, teams don't always play to their full quality every week. And, you know, the difference between having a good week and a bad week is bigger than the difference between teams. So it's like upset city every week in MLR, which is great. I mean, that's what we want to see as fans.
I mean, they've been harping on about parity in the NFL for 20 plus years, and I think that we have it in the first space of our first few. I think rugby lends itself to that as well, that on any given Sunday type of a deal, you know, an upset can happen. I think you'll see a team like a young team like Anthem, let's just say, it's very easy to, if you watch their games, to see how quickly they're building. And, you know, I know that we sent down a team and beat them down there, and we played a lot of our squad players and things like that to get them minutes. But it's lovely to see a team like Anthem being able to put points on the board now and build. And I'm really hopeful that they get a couple of victories this year to set them right for next year. We're seeing that league-wide. Remember when Dallas were having a tough year, and Miami also. All these new franchises that come in will struggle early. But we're now seeing, you know, them all start to be successful, and it's making the league much stronger. I think that the quality in the league has skyrocketed over the last 2 to 3 years. And, you know, we're now, it's no longer, you know, this fledgling league, even though it's young in years. There's a lot of old heads in the league now. There's a lot of good rugby being played. There's a lot of good coaching staffs. There's, you know, the arrows are all pointing upwards. It's really encouraging, and I'm here for it.
yeah, I think it's been a great season of MLR so far. And, you know, Old Glory, I mean, it feels like we could be doing better. I feel like it's not that the season has been super disappointing so far. I mean, you know, we're 50% on the season. That's pretty much average. It's hard to be too upset with that, especially given some of the seasons we've had in the past. But it does feel like we've got more in us. And particularly, you know, defensively, we have such good long defensive stands so often where we'll hold a team out for like 40 minutes, 60 minutes where they just can't score. And then we just seem to undo it all in a, you know, 5-10 minutes of loose play. It feels like there's another level for this team, and I really hope we can get to that.
I 100% agree. I think we're probably playing right now in third gear. There's a lot more to come. I think that, Coach Cross probably has only installed, you know, 70% of what he's looking to do. And clearly from speaking with others, defense has been hugely important to him and building that kind of ethos within the squad. I think that's being achieved, but I really do think now that we need to start kicking on with our offensive game. Yeah. I think we have enough possessions, during the game that we'll definitely hold out even the best team several times during the game. We'll have big defensive stands. We've proven that now. We're no longer going to be down 21-0 in the first 15 minutes. Our boys face up and really, really work hard at the breakdown. That's encouraging. I'd like to see more of it. But my concern going back currently is how do we get the ball out to our playmakers in space? That's loving what Axel Mueller's doing. I'm loving what Rizzo's doing. Perry Humphreys, anybody in the back three, all seem to be having good seasons. And I'd love to see them get the ball in hand a little bit more. Mueller just seems exceedingly dangerous when he has ball in hand. And I feel that we just get choked in midfield too often. And if we can do, we've done it a couple of times. I remember when Willy Talatina pulled a ball back out of the middle and got it out quickly to Rizzo to score. More of that, please. It seems that we just take the ball into contact quite a bit there. And that's a terrible spot, in my opinion, because usually the other team seven is lurking around there to try to poach. So I would like to see us just try to spice things up a little bit there, have a little bit of, a little bit more attacking nuance, if you will, and hopefully we can make a few more breaks and finish some tries.
Yeah, I really do think it is about getting those wingers in space. I mean, I remember the stats from the LA game. It's Axel Mueller gained something like 36 meters, but also had to beat three defenders to even get that many meters. And like, it, when your winger's having to beat defenders that often just to get, you know, a paltry number of meters, that means you're not giving him enough space. You're really making him do too much work. You're not getting the most out of what he can do on the wing and not really giving him the space to work. And certainly in the stands, that's what it looked like and what it felt like. So it's you know, and we saw what Rizzo could do against Anthem. You know, once he had some space and, you know, a bit of a team that had a bit that doesn't quite have the same level of defensive system and doesn't have the same ability to adjust, we could get him in some space. And he was electric in that game, couple of tries. And, you know, it's like,
we do have to understand as well, a lot of the fields are a little bit narrower than they would be used to in other countries. So that, you know, cutting down even a few feet makes the defensive job easier, right? So we do have to give them that little bit of leeway right there. We understand that, but everybody else has to play the same way, you know. So hopefully we can get that sorted out, and if we do, we're a game for anybody, that's for sure.
So you know, looking forward into the rest of the season, you know, obviously first bye week, we've got another four games until the next bye week. We're hosting Houston this week, Utah. We're going out to Utah the next week, then home against Miami, and then at Chicago the week after that before our next bye. It feels like this is sort of the middle stretch of the season where, you know, the people who are the real contenders are going to separate mm-hmm. themselves out. And certainly if we get behind in this stretch, it feels like it could be a real problem for us. What are you, you know, looking at those games, what are you expecting from them? What are you hoping for from them?
Well, I'm hoping for 3 wins out of the 4 games. That's a hope. But the reality is it's probably, I would take 2-2 if that was possible. And I think a lot of it kind of boils down to this very next game. The Houston game has come up very quickly on us here. And, you know, they're a very good team this year, very powerful and strong. And if we could get a result against Houston, I think it would set us up. I mean, a home victory would be huge, like I mentioned earlier. Again, against another Premier team, we'd beaten New England. If we beat Houston, you know, that immediately kind of stamps our legitimacy, if you will, for a playoff seeding. And, you know, I think the boys coming off a bye week, New England beat Houston down there last week. So it's, you know, it's totally possible. But I think we need a heck of a performance from the boys to pull this one out. And if they do, it's game on for the season for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I feel like the games after that, we've got a real shot. Utah's been a little suspect this year. They've had some moments of looking good, but they've also had a lot of moments of looking fairly bad.
Absolutely. And their defense has been a little bit dodgy for sure. So I wouldn't be too scared of going over there. While it's a brilliant environment, I will agree that their team's not playing quite as well as it has for the last couple of years. So I wouldn't be too worried about going in there to take those guys on.
Yeah. And similarly, Miami, you know, they just, like you were saying, new team, and unlike LA and who seem to have sort of figured some at a fairly high level, if they could get the discipline under control. Mm-hmm. Miami just hasn't quite figured it out yet. So I would assume, you know, that's also a good candidate for a home win there.
Yeah. You have to try to beat your teams that are in your conference also, you know, yeah. So I would almost take a Utah loss just to get a Miami win. I know that's like, people would hate to hear that, but it's very important to beat the teams that are in your side of the bracket. And I feel like that we could do that without, you know, too much trouble. I think, Miami's going to be an interesting place to go down and play for sure. It's, you know, there's a lot of Argentinian folks down there, and, you know, they're very passionate about their rugby. So, again, no longer are they going to be the Owen Forever team. You know, they're a legitimate rugby team now as well. I think we're better than them currently, I'm saying that I think we'll still take a win there, but it's none of these games are easy.
Yeah, there really aren't any guarantees, and especially if you start thinking about them as oh, we should be able to get that game, and then you take it a little less seriously, and then it's no longer a... But yeah, assuming the team takes it seriously, we're allowed to not take it seriously. We're just a bunch of pundits on a podcast. But yeah, and then, you know, finishing out that stretch with Chicago, I think, like you were saying, I do think we're better than Chicago, although Chicago with Carl say at 10 is a slightly more fearsome prospect.
No, for sure.
But I feel like we should be able to win that game, or at least challenge hard and, like, you know, call that one a coin flip. But mm-hmm. it's another game that you really want to win. That's this, you know, if we can beat Chicago and get a little further ahead in the standings and hopefully get a home playoff game, that would be
We should have beaten Chicago here.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about it. We snatched a draw out of the flitting victory that we should have had. It was just, I don't know. That was the most disheartening little bit of the season for me so far. I know we lost to San Diego, and I didn't think that was the only game where I'd say I didn't feel like we were very in it, you know, all day. But every other game, we've been hyper competitive for long periods of time. And you know, I'm not concerned about going to Chicago. Maybe it'll be on a different day. We could put, you know, half a dozen tries on that team if we wanted, you know, but vice versa, same goes, you know. So it has potential to be another great game. I'm actually looking forward to that game again. Bit of unfinished business there.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully the team can come through. But looking, you know, a little more directly to this weekend, you know, we've talked a little bit about Houston already here. What are you thinking about that team in particular? Like who are you watching out for? What do they do super well? What are you afraid of? And where do you think we're going to have an edge over them?
Great questions. So I think that they're just straight up a very powerful team. They have a lot of physicality, huge South African presence, as you know, Human Pote being the coach and Henkie Meyer there also as director of rugby. They're really putting their mark on that team of how they want to see the game played. They have a beautiful stadium there that, you know, it's rocking down there now. So things are going well for Houston finally. And I watched them at the weekend and their scrum seemed to be very, very good, even against like New England. And that would worry me slightly. I know we've had a good scrum. We've had no major scrum issues this year. But that is one area where I feel Houston might have a slight advantage there. I think that we might have an advantage in the lineouts, however, and I think that's even more important because of the potential to launch first phase attack ball off that. I feel like attacking off lineouts these days is much more prevalent than off the scrums, simply because of the scrum rules and the one reset and things like that has taken a bit of the sting out of things there. So I would rather have the lineout advantage if it were me. Hopefully Rob Harley and Doughty and guys like that can, you know, get some clean ball and we're away to the races. I think our wingers have proven to be much are very dangerous this year, but it's just Houston have attacking threats all over the place. AJ Alamutu was there now. You know, they brought in a couple of guys from New York as well, but it's still the same. It's the Van Vicks, the Bassoons, Redling Hayes, you know, all these big Safa guys that you know, only know one way, and it's go forward at all times. And they're great at it. And they will use that to batter Old Glory and then be able to release their own backline, who are fast and strong also. So question one is, can we contain the pack? I think we can for large periods, but it's going to be a tough job. If we do that, we'll create a good platform for ourselves. If we can't match the physicality in the forwards, it's going to be a very, very tough day for us.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I definitely, you know, they get a lot of credit for being a very physical team, but I feel like that backline is also quite a lot of a threat. There's a lot of you know, really good options in there. Christian Dyer,
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so. That's definitely something I think we're going to want to watch out for if scrums are going to be a problem. So, you know, getting into like what we expect the starting lineup, I feel like the starting lineup has mostly settled down now. But, you know, we played Cali Martinez. We started Cali Martinez and he's not as strong a scrummager, but he's great in the open field. But maybe if Houston's scrum is going to be strong, we go for Tyler Rowland instead on that.
It's not even a question in my books. Tyler needs to start. I hope Joe Rafter is back. We need him, whether he be starting or on the bench, but we need that bigger body. It's an awful shame that Kevin Brew hasn't got a minute this year, because this would be a game where we'd be looking to him to make his mark. You know, it's just a shame. Injuries happen, you know, and I talked to him last last week, and you know, he's very frustrated that he hasn't gotten out, but you know, he'll be here for next year as well. So it's just a shame that I don't think we're going to see him at all this year with the injury that he has to his leg. Going back to the Houston game and the front row, it's, you know, it's Jack, it's Vaca, and it's Roland that I think would be the starters there, if you will. And you know, I've enjoyed seeing Facundo. You know, I think he's having a bit of a better season this year, actually. Yeah. And he can move across, obviously, from Hooker into prop as well, if needed. So there is a little bit of leeway there. We have Newcomer and Cali that have been basically on the bench there to come in for the last, you know, half hour or so. And can they hold up to the, you know, extreme pressure that Houston are going to try to put on? We'll see.
Yeah, I guess it'll be a chance for them to step up and sort of prove themselves in a very tough environment.
Absolutely. But they did it against New England, you know, It's not like we're asking them to do something that they've never done before. In fact, they were the ones that made the comeback, if you will, that last 20 minutes. We were the ones that stepped on the gas.
Penalty, yeah.
Exactly. So can we get that? I love seeing the bench guys come off and perform, because it's a really good sign that your squad is humming, you know, when there's such competition that the lads that come off are like, well, bloody hell, I'm going to absolutely give everything here to get the start next week. And I see it time and again this year that guys are really stepping up. It's hard to tell. I think, again, Simon Cross is doing such a good job playing, getting everybody minutes in good spots. So it'll be, I think we're going to see our full team this week, though. I think we're going to see who he would consider our top performers at this moment. I think that's going to be our team sheet this week.
Yeah. Who would you have in the backs, basically unchanged from what it was? I don't know if Perry Humphries is back or not.
It's hard. Obviously, Jason is there. I'm hoping the chicken is back fit now. I'd love to see him get a run in 15, maybe even over Graydon. I know Graydon's got a nice boot, though. You know, it's a good get out of jail card kind of there. The wingers, Axel's just, he's mortared in there now. It's I would be shocked if he didn't get on the team sheet. I'm personally pushing for Rizzo on the other side. I thought he's done great. I think Ethan McVeigh will probably get the start at 9, which is stunning to me from the beginning of the season. I was like, who's this kid? You know, now I knew that where he'd come from and things like that. And, you know, there's been a lot of good words said about him. But, you know, he's pushing out two really good players. And I think he's deserving of the start there. I wouldn't be shocked if Buckley or Danny, either of them are there as well. But I think McVeigh probably gets the start there. Centers is going to be Tommy Boney and probably Big Willie. But Powers is obviously in with the shout. I just need to see a little bit more creativity from whoever's in there. Maybe Jason can do a little bit extra there with the, you know, whip around to get an extra man out to his right. But the team is kind of picking itself now in a way. It'll be it's just up to them to perform.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much accurate. So do you have a score prediction?
Do I have a score prediction? I think it's going to be a high scoring game, and I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be like 20, I'd say like 30. Old Glory needs to get about 30 to win this game. And I'll say low 20s for Houston, like 22, 23, something like that. Sorry, I don't have the exact. I'm very on the fence about this game. I think it's going to be a much closer game than a lot of people. I would say Houston are probably considered the favorites, although I haven't seen the betting lines. I just think that having a bye weekend, playing at home, it's got to count for something. Hopefully we can fix a few of the attacking issues we've had and go out and give Houston some serious trouble. So I'll literally just take the Old Glory victory right now. I don't care how we get it.
Yeah, I definitely think it could be high scoring. And as good as the Old Glory defense is, I think there's no way we stop them getting, you know, the bonus point, the try bonus point. I think if anything, one of the things that could be very much in our favor, though, is the wind at the Soccerplex, which
yes,
we saw in the San Diego game. It can really get quite windy up there. Mm-hmm. You know, Paul Sheehy was saying that it's always windy there. So, but you know, Jason's got his eye in there now. It seems like he's pretty settled in. He's figured out what the wind patterns are there, so that could be a real advantage for us.
It's lovely having a guy like Jason back. You know, he's just such a settled head and you know, a calming influence on the entire team. But you know, again, he's another player who's just going to want to step up his game as well. I don't think anybody could be just completely happy with how they're playing. I still think that the entire team has more in them, but as the season goes on, like we've mentioned, we'll get there. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, that's fair. So let's do some quick fire picks here. Just the rest of the games going on this weekend. Free Jacks are going to be hosting Seattle. Both of them are top of their respective conferences. We saw the Free Jacks beat Houston this past weekend. What do you think here?
Take Seattle.
Yeah.
Seattle's my favorite team in the league. I say favorite. I think they're the best team in the league. Old Glory's my favorite team. But Seattle, their coaching staff are fantastic. Rickard Hatting is probably the best captain in the league. They have so much strength and depth. They just bring players out of, you know, the Seattle Rugby Club and things, and they just become starters. So they have a lovely environment up there in the Pacific Northwest. There's great rugby up there at a club level even. They've got, you know, they're right up close to Canada. You know, they have a lot of advantages. But they've done just such a good job nurturing that team if anybody is capable of going and taking on New England, it's those guys.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. The only thing I would say is that New England, I feel like, hasn't been super consistent this year. So, you know, it's like, I think I would favor Seattle generally, but New England could just explode for a million points and win anyway. So
easy. That's what makes MLR so fun, because we could be here next week going, what the hell were we talking about? You know, New England beat them by 30. And that's, again, what makes it exciting, makes it worthwhile watching as well, you know? So, I will agree with you, though, the New England up and down, them beating Houston, I'm actually taking that into account and thinking that they might be resting a little bit on their laurels there, haven't done such a good job. And playing two top West Coast contenders back to back, that's a big ask.
Yeah, absolutely is. The next match is going to be NOLA hosting Miami. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure you've got to say that NOLA is favored here, but is there a chance of an upset for Miami?
Definitely a chance of an upset. I still think NOLA will take it, but again, close game, toss of a coin, really. Both teams are getting better. I still think NOLA is just straight up the better team. Playing at home, they should take it at the gold mine.
Yeah. Chicago is going to be hosting LA. So the two teams that we've
obviously a draw, right?
Yeah. If it's not a 22-22 draw, I'm going to be a little disappointed.
Let's just call it a draw, shall we, and move on.
Yeah. I mean, I think both the teams are, you know, they're pretty even. It'll just be a matter of how many yellow cards LA gets.
Well, they'll have no coal, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. I think we'll just call that a draw.
Call it a draw, move on.
Yep.
Last game of the weekend, San Diego against Utah. That's in San Diego.
You have to take the Legion, I'm afraid. Utah haven't shown me that they're capable just yet of winning a big one. And I would consider this to be a big one. Also, San Diego have to keep pace with that West Coast Conference because of Houston and Seattle. So every game is sort of important to them. I don't see them taking Utah lightly at all. I see a comfortable San Diego victory.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the obvious pick, and there's a reason it's obvious. So we're going to end this week, and for once, I get to do the spring the surprise question on someone else. So we'll close off with this. This is what Fitzy always does to me, gives me a question that I have not prepared for, and I somehow always forget that it's coming. So your unexpected question here is, what player has surprised you the most on Old Glory this season?
What player has surprised me the most? Excellent question. Oh, so not that it's a major surprise, but the player that has, I feel, done the most is Rob Harley. I just love watching that guy play, and he's like a piece of granite, and he's just solidified the scrum. Being a former second row myself, the importance of a good second row is everything in a scrum. And from listening to what the guys are saying, they just say he is just so good to have behind you in the scrums. So I'm very, very happy about that. I would say the guy local guy is John Rizzo, actually. I think he's taken with both hands every single opportunity he's been given, and he deserves more. And, you know, again, happy with Axel Müller on the other side, but we kind of thought that he was going to be good anyway. I loved seeing the local guys come through, the Daniel brothers, obviously Corey coming off an injury last year and seeing him top of the tackle counts again and just, you know, being a menace, and now his brother coming in. That's just great for the area in general. And I would say I'm going to take Rizzo as the guy that sort of surprised me most. The guy that I've enjoyed the most has been Rob Harley, and seeing his work ethic around the field and where he's talking to his own players and telling them to shut up and get back on the job. And, you know, the focus that he has, it can only be good to have players like that around you, you know? So I'd love to talk to some of the guys that have been in with the club for a few years and see, you know, what differences a guy like that, you know, a Scottish international, for goodness sake, could make to a club. I think that he's one to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Well, thanks for that question that I wasn't prepared for.
I deal with it every week. I finally get to foisted on someone else. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's been great to have you. Been meaning to get you on for a while. It's great to have your insights again into Old Glory. I mean, I would always listen to the Road to Glory podcast and think, ah, damn, I should have thought of that every comment.
Well, I'm really nice to be here. I hope to come back again at some point. And listen, any day we're talking about rugby is a good day, right?
Absolutely. And so with that, you've been listening to the Glorious Rugby Podcast. My name is Alistair Kirschpool, joined this week by Roland Pratt, and earlier in the episode by John Fitzpatrick. Catch you again next week.